Sam Riviera's 2015 collection, Kim Kardashian's Marriage, is an example of post-internet poetry. Post-internet poetry is the practice of using web content as the basis of poetry. And this paper will attempt to show that a Heideggerian analysis can shed light on this contemporary practice in a way that renews Heidegger's poetic thought and calls it into question in the light of new poetic practices. Specifically, Riviera's collection will be considered in terms of Heidegger's opposing accounts of both technology and poetry. Social media and the internet can be understood in terms of Heidegger's critique of technology as enframing, and thus it is part of the extreme danger of the information age, with its associated marginalization of art. However, this danger is accompanied by a saving power, and we will ask if a collection like Riviera's can succeed in making the danger of the internet explicit. Post-internet poetry is one of many different ways that contemporary poets have responded to the ubiquity of the internet and social media in modern life. It refers to the practice of reusing internet content to make poetry. Of course, the practice of using pre-existing text as poetry is not new. In fact, it can be traced back to the visual art and the visual arts to Marcel Duchamp's Ready Mades. In poetry, there is a well-established technique of found poetry, the literary equivalent of collage, which involves reformatting old text in order to create new meaning. Maeve McGuckian, for example, used this technique to powerful effect in the 1990s. Post-internet poetry uses the internet as its raw material. It is not exactly a new phenomenon either. In 2013, Harry Burke edited an anthology of post-internet poetry called I Love Roses When They're Past Their Best. Each of the poets featured in the collection and the anthology had his or her own way of interacting with computer or web-based technologies. These range from poems consisting of sequences of online search results to works that take their starting point in the materials of social media. While post-internet poetry is still very much in the experimental category, it is a technique that is showing up more and more in the admittedly small world of contemporary poetry. A prominent recent example of post-internet poetry is Kim Kardashian's Marriage, the second full collection by English poet Sam Riviere. Riviere's first collection, 81 of Austerities, which was published by Faber and Faber in 2012, won the Forward Prize for Best First Collection. At first reading, Kim Kardashian's Marriage could be mistaken for regular, if fairly bad, pre-internet poetry. There is nothing at first glance to point to the collection's distinctive methodology. But like the poems of his first collection, all these poems first appeared on Riviera's blog. There are 72 poems, one for each day of Kim Kardashian's first marriage. The book is divided into 8 sections. Each one is named after a stage in Kardashian's famous makeup routine. So we have primer, contour, highlight, powder, blend, shadow, liner, and gloss. The blurb on the inside cover claims that these elements are employed to explore surfaces and self-consciousness, presentation and obfuscation. But the poems themselves have actually very little to do with the ill-fated marriage and are in fact created by Googling the titles, then piecing together the results in a way that is reminiscent of flower poetry movement. The titles themselves have been chosen by employing an elaborate process of recombining chapter headings from Riviera's previous books to generate a number of key words such as girlfriend, grave, hardcore, and notably sincerity. These titles are then fed into Google and the poet takes the first 10 results of each search and edits them into poems. There is not one added word in the entire collection, so you don't even need to write a word to be a poet. The blurb explains this by commenting that Riviere eschews a dependence on confessional modes of writing to explore what kind of meaning lies in impersonal methods of creation. So just to give you a flavor of the poems themselves, in the first section there is a poem entitled American Sunglasses. American Sunglasses. In the movie The American, the 2010 film The American and Gunsmith, George Clooney, looking effortless in the Purcell 3009, wears a pair of Havana-coloured Purcell 2883 sunglasses. As you can see, the poem is bland but strangely compelling, yet commentators are divided as to their value and how to understand them. Leontia Flynn sums it up when she asks whether Kim Kardashian's marriage marks a critique of contemporary tastes or merely a reflection of them. I will suggest that a Heideggerian approach can provide us with a new, perhaps deeper way to understand this collection. The themes of technology and poetry are among the main concerns of the later Heidegger. Both can be understood in terms of unconcealment and truth. In opposition to many philosophical accounts of truth that tend to view scientific truth as the gold standard, Heidegger claims that art, particularly poetry, is truth. Throughout the 1930s, Heidegger further develops his account of truth as unconcealment. In The Origin of the Work of Art, Heidegger employs the now famous example of Van Gogh's pair of peasant shoes. Heidegger demonstrates that it is the painting that lets us know what the shoes are in truth. Later on in the essay, he tells us that poetry is the paradigm of truth in this elithic sense, because it uses language, and for the later Heidegger, language is essential to unconcealment. The importance of poetic language is also displayed in the poetic language that Heidegger himself employs when, for example, he describes the world disclosed by the peasant shoes depicted in Van Gogh's painting. Truth, in this sense, has the ability to bring a world into view. Truth can never be understood simply as a correct correspondence between some proposition and a state of affairs in the world. Rather, we must understand it in terms of strife between concealment and unconcealment, or earth and world, as he says in this essay. It is this fact that makes art the ultimate realm of truth. The work of art wins the open area between world and earth. It is not a question of correspondence, but rather truth must be wrested from unconcealment or earth. We can also understand Heidegger's account of the technological in terms of unconcealment and truth. But first, we need to understand what he means by the technological. While the technological refers to equipment and the ways in which we use it, technology is the way in which things reveal themselves. While Heidegger acknowledges that viewing technology in terms of human activity or as a means to an end are correct characterizations, his understanding operates at a different level. Here again, we see the difference between correctness and truth. A correct characterization may be appropriate or pertinent, but it does not capture the essence of technology. But it is truth that it is essential in order to achieve a free relationship to technology. Technology is a way in which things reveal themselves or move into presence, and therefore it can be considered a part of poesis, Heidegger tells us. The word technology derives from techne, which not only refers to the skills and work of craftsmen, but also to the poetic bringing forth of the arts and therefore of poesis. The possibility of all productive manufacturing lies in revealing, Heidegger says. The craftsman creating a chalice reveals what is to be brought forth. Technology is a realm where revealing and unconcealment take place and is therefore a realm of truth. If technology is a mode of revealing, then how can we characterize it? And do we need to characterize modern technology in a way that is different from older technology? Heidegger suggests that the revealing associated with modern technology is fundamentally different from other modes of revealing. This is because it challenges rather than reveals, and as such, it is not part of poesis. Poesis is defined by Heidegger as a bringing forth. So while enframing is a mode of revealing, it is its challenging character means that it cannot be considered a part of poesis. Again, this can be understood in terms of truth. And framing derives from a way of representation associated with modern science, especially physics. In physics, Heidegger tells us, nature presents as a calculable complex of the effects of forces. And as such, it can indeed permit correct determinations, but precisely through these successes, the danger may remain that in the midst of all that is correct, the true will withdraw. So although enframing is a way of revealing, it reveals in such a way as that the truth gives way to the correct. In fact, it is this that makes enframing the supreme danger. Replacing truth with correctness means that objects become objectless or stand in reserve. But the danger does not end there. As soon as what is unconcealed no longer concerns man even as an object, but exclusively a standing reserve, and man in the midst of objectlessness is nothing but the orderer of standing reserve, then he comes to the very brink of a precipitous fall. That is, he comes to the point where he himself will be taken as standing reserve, Heidegger says in the question concerning technology. The danger associated with enframing is twofold. The human being herself becomes standing reserve, and second, the human being begins to see everything else as a human construct, and thus only ever encounters herself. In all of this, humankind loses the connection with its deeper essence, and every other possibility is driven out. As we can see, the relationship between enframing and truth is complex. Heidegger tells us, enframing blocks the shining forth and the holding sway of truth. So while truth is unconcealment, not all unconcealment is truth. Enframing threatens man with the possibility that it could be denied to him to enter into a more original revealing and hence to experience the call of a more primal truth. In short, while art and enframing are both concerned with unconcealment, their relationships to truth greatly differ. Enframing conceals that revealing which, in the sense of poesis, lets what presences come forth into appearance. It is the coming forth that is altered in enframing. Things no longer come forth, they are forced into unconcealment that is correct rather than true. Heidegger is serious about the consequences of enframing for humanity. Enframing is not simply a choice about how to view the world. It is no mere human doing. We are already trapped within it and can only take up a relationship with it subsequently. The consequences for art are obviously drastic. If art is truth, and framing drives out truth, replacing it with correctness, then art is driven out where enframing holds sway, is the kind of negative picture that Heidegger is suggesting. Where the true becomes the correct, it makes art mysterious, and aesthetic accounts are proffered as a way of understanding art, but these, according to Heidegger, are doomed to failure. There is some hope in this rather depressing Heideggerian picture. At the end of a question concerning technology, Heidegger quotes Hölderlin. He says, "But where the danger is, grows the saving power also." Though enframing is the extreme danger, it cannot exhaust itself solely in blocking all lighting up of every revealing. I don't know why I put Heidegger quotes into papers. While enframing drives out truth, it cannot drive it out completely. Even though enframing renders objects objectless, when we look deeper into the essence of technology, we also find a saving power. But to access the power requires preparation and a consideration of what it is that makes enframing the essence of technology. It is not essence in the sense of a universal category under which examples of technology such as computers and sawmills fall. It is essence in the sense of destining. Destining is inherently linked to what it means to be human and thus to receive being. For the later Heidegger, destiny can be understood in terms of two elements, language and historicity. The danger of technology is not the consequence of using technological devices, but rather it has to be understood in terms of language and historicity. Consequently, the saving power must also be understood in terms of these elements. To harness the saving power, Heidegger extols us to look with yet clearer eyes into the danger. He says, the saving power lets man see and enter into the highest dignity of his essence. The dignity lies in keeping watch over the unconcealment, and with it, from the first, the concealment of all essential unfolding on the earth. The saving power comes from keeping watch over the unconcealment. The unconcealment associated with framing is not just a point of view or a way of looking at the world that can be easily changed. We are told that man merely responds to the call of unconcealment, even when he contradicts it. What is required is essential reflection upon technology and decisive confrontation with this. And this must happen in a realm that is, on the other hand, akin to the on the one hand, akin to the essence of technology, and on the other, fundamentally different from it, and such a realm as art. So there is some sort of strange reciprocity between art and framing. Just as an framing makes it difficult to account for art, an understanding of the essence of technology can only happen within the realm of art. It is not much of a leap to view the internet as an framing technology. Leighton Evans, for example, has worked this out in the case of social media. He argues that the resources of social networking are people, and that the users of these networks become mere standing reserve. In this way, the internet and social media are no different from any other modern technology, but rather they can be seen as a progression of it. The essence of technology is not the web-based technology that drives social media, or indeed the activities of its users, but rather it is a mode of revealing that leads to the success of these social media sites, and these sites in turn strengthen and framing as the only mode of revealing. Thus, Evans makes the further claim that as social media increases, it will begin to replace traditional social interaction. Richard Dreyfuss goes further, suggesting that social media, or being in cyberspace generally, leads to nihilism, and eventually the total rejection of interpersonal relationships. So as we've seen, some commentators have asked whether Riviere's collection is a critique of the information age or merely a gimmick that reflects it. Can a Heideggerian framework allow us to make sense of this collection? It is certainly difficult to appraise the collection with normal poetic criteria. For example, the poems do not avoid cliché, but they are practically composed of it. There is nothing vivid in Riviera's description. In fact, they are entirely bland. In the new sunsets, we are told, sunsets through trees, it's always beautiful. And in Spooky Weather, we read, lightning and thunder send shudders down your spine, late October rain drizzling down. Certainly, the language lacks vivacity or freshness of description that is generally viewed as a feature of good poetry. Viewed from one standpoint, these poems are just bad, but there is something unnerving and familiar about them. We are all too familiar with the language of the internet, whether we pay attention to it or not. There is no escape from it. In framing, Heidegger tells us that even if we avoid technology, we cannot avoid framing. Does the language employed by Riviere bring the internet into view in a new way, showing the reader explicitly what it is that they are being subjected to? As we saw above, the saving power grows at the heart of framing and has to be understood in terms of language and historicity. For Heidegger, a contemporary poet who can convey historicity in terms of the danger technology poses, is a poet that can express the essence of the internet, is one filling the role of poet. While Riviera's language is very different from the poetic language Heidegger uses when he describes the peasant's toil and the origin of the work of art, or the farmer and the question concerning technology, the question then is not, does this language display the essence of the internet? Does this language display the essence of the internet as it is connected to historicity and language? Does the use of language in Kim Kardashian's marriage help us to look with yet clearer eyes into the danger and thus allow us to take up a relationship with